In Chicago, you know that all sports rock. The Bears, Hawks, Bulls, Cubs, and Sox. Pick your favorite, you can choose. As long as the Packers lose. For everything you need to know, it's Bill Swarski Sports Talk Chicago. Bill Swarski Sports Talk Chicago.
Hey everybody, welcome to another edition of Bill Swirsky Sports Talk Chicago. This is your hosts, Alex and Sean. On this episode, we're going to be talking about something we've been waiting months and months and months for, finally came to fruition. We're talking some Bears, some Bulls, some Blackhawks, some White Sox, and more. But first, I'd like to thank our sponsor, the Rockford IceHogs. If you're not familiar with the Rockford IceHogs, they're the AHL minor league affiliate of the Chicago Blackhawks. What does that mean for you? You get to see the stars of tomorrow today at family-friendly, affordable prices. Season is going on right now, so make sure you head on over to icehogs.com. Get yourself a hat, shirt, jersey, tickets, and more. Tell them Swirsky Sports sent you. Alex, how are you doing?
I am doing great. We had some great news that hit very late Saturday night, early Sunday morning, and I've really been enjoying the Chris Chelios, Patrick Kane return game so far. You know, right now we're going to the third period, but regardless of the outcome on the ice, even though I really want to win this game, it's been really fun to watch. I don't know if you've been watching, but that retirement ceremony was incredible. Absolutely incredible. And seeing all the stars there, Dennis Rodman, Eddie Vedder, Theo Epstein, Wayne Gretzky, and we just had Cindy Crawford and Theo Epstein and Eddie Vedder do the shoot the puck during the breaks, the intermission. But, I mean, it was an amazing speech. And, you know, Chris Chelios is a Chicago guy. So this hits home particularly special for a lot of people because he is one of us. You know, for a long time, he was more than just a Blackhawks player, but he was truly one of us. Grew up on the South Side, went to Mount Carmel, became very close with guys like Dick Butkus. And, you know, I mentioned Michael Jordan and Dennis Rodman. So truly somebody we can look at and relate to. And I just thought it was really cool that after all these years, and I think after a number of years of some sour feelings of watching him win cups with their most hated rival, I'm kind of glad it's come back full circle and that he's truly part of the Blackhawks again and will forever be part of the Blackhawks.
Yeah, that dude has had the life. I mean, he lives in a mansion in Malibu where all of his neighbors are celebrities. He's friends with, you know, all these crazy people that not only just friends, but like, hey, I'm having my number retired. Come into Chicago. And just like an A-list group of celebrities show up for it. Like, that dude has the life, man.
You have bigger Bulls names show up for Chris Chelios than the actual Bulls Ring of Honor ceremony.
Yeah, the Ring of Honor had like nobody show up. Chelly, it's like, hey, come on in. Oh yeah, no problem. I can do it.
Jordan, and I won't take that personally because I like you. Let's go.
How embarrassing is that for the Bulls, though?
Oh yeah, I mean, it just once again, it continues to make Jerry Reinsdorf just look like a total hack. And obviously, we're going to talk plenty about him, but that really, really is embarrassing. I mean, the fact that there was more pomp and circumstance for that Bulls dynasty from Chris Chelios, I mean, that really says something. And then I thought it was really cool, too, how he gave that little tribute to Dick Butkus. You know, obviously, Dick Butkus passing away earlier this year and, you know, talked about his relationship with him. And then they put Dick Butkus's image, like, on the boards. I mean, it's just, you know, how many retirement ceremonies can we sit down and say, hey, this guy he's talking about all Chicago sports. So like, you know, we as Blackhawks fans obviously remember him on different levels. You know, he played when either I was before I was born or when I was too little, at least with the Blackhawks. I mean, I remember him playing with the Red Wings and the Chicago Wolves at one point. But, you know, we know the stories. We've seen, you know, the footage and whatnot for even those who didn't really witness it live. But, you know, the fact that he could come out and relate to, hey, you know, man, I was there for the 85 Bears and that great defense and the Jordan dynasty and the two World Series by the Cubs and Sox. It just, that was really cool. And I think he connected in a way to the fans that you don't get very often from professional athletes, because sure, you have a lot of legends in this town, but you know, they weren't, you know, Chicago born and raised. You know, Chris Chelios, you know, grew up here. And it, like I said, it's just one of us. I think that's really cool.
It's like, I don't know. I haven't really done the research, but Dick Butkus and Chris Chelios, are there two, regardless of sport, are there two better players who had, who played for their hometown team? Like, that's, it's like an incredible story. Like, I mean, Chris Chelios is arguably the greatest American hockey player, American-born hockey player ever. Arguably.
With the one of the other arguably's also making a return to the United Center tonight. Yeah. And then you could say Mike Modano is in that conversation too. But a top three, it's no doubt Chris Chelios is top three. Because, you know, we've had this conversation before where, like, there are greats and Hall of Famers, and then there are Hall of Famers. And both Chris Chelios and Dick Butkus in their respective sports are at that S-tier level of Hall of Famers.
Yeah. I mean, Dick Butkus is like one of the greatest of all times. And, you know, is like not a suburb. He's Chicago born and bred and played for the Bears. And, you know, Chelly is from Evergreen Park and, you know, played for the Blackhawks. It's there's not a ton of those stories, and to have two of the best of their sports is pretty neat.
It is. And I think that it was really appropriate that Chris Chelios was able to, you know, just connect with the fans on the level of, you know what? Hey, I was a Red Wing, but go ahead. You could boo them for a minute here. Like, I thought that was kind of funny. Like, you know, he was really trying not to talk about his Red Wings tenure because, you know, he knows that there was a lot of, you know, sour feelings over that, whether how much of that was his doing or not. Obviously, he was traded there, but I think there was a good self-awareness there where he didn't disrespect the Red Wings, nor should he. But, you know, he wasn't trying to talk up his time at the Red Wings. He was really focusing on his time in Chicago, which was the whole point here. I mean, you know, an entire decade of the 90s spending it with the Blackhawks, it's a long time.
Yeah. And, you know, the Blackhawks did it right. You know, they made this such a special thing, and they did have it against the Red Wings. You know, even though he's retiring with the number with the Blackhawks, it's a nod to the time that he spent there. And having Patrick Kane be back, that's just, you know, a neat thing. So it was really well orchestrated, and the Chicago Bulls, their stadium mates, could really take a beat from this.
No kidding. No kidding. I mean, hey, when you have Chris Chelios coming on the ice in a Cadillac, like, come on, how can you top that? And I really loved how they kept that 90s theme. You know, all the music was all 90s, and obviously you had a fair share of Pearl Jam in there because his relationship with Eddie Vedder. I don't know if you remember, but Eddie Vedder was the one that informed him he was being retired by the Blackhawks at that concert, because they had the concert at the United Center, and he brought Chelios up on stage and then pointed up to the video board, and they showed his number 7 in the rafters. Yeah. I mean, how neat is that?
Yep. I mean, that's, I don't know how they orchestrated all that, but it was neat for him, you know, because he is close with Eddie Vedder.
Yeah, and he, I mean, directly shouted him out when he was in the booth with Theo Epstein and Ryan Dempster. And I thought it was really neat too how during his speech they were panning around the United Center, like, oh, there's Dennis Rodman, oh, there's Wayne Gretzky, oh, there's Eddie Vedder. So you just, they would have these shots of the crowd, you'd be like, oh, there's another A-lister, and you kind of just started adding on the list of people who are there. And I know that, you know, they talked about who was going to be there and they had video before, but it was cool just actively showing who was there. And I mean, when you have a building that has like two of the greatest athletes of all time in it, What does that say about what an impact Chris Chelios has made?
Oh yeah, absolutely. When yeah, you have Wayne Gretzky and Michael Jordan show up.
And Michael Jordan was not eating the whole pizza this time in his suite.
If they would have only had Bo Jackson, they could have had the complete pro stars.
Oh man, that would have been so cool. That would
Do
have
you?
been so cool.
It's before your time, but I don't know if you've seen it, like on YouTube or something, a cartoon where Michael Jordan, Wayne Gretzky, and Bo Jackson were superheroes.
Yes, I have seen a little bit of that. Really funny. So campy, but it's so great.
It's so terrible, but I like when I was a kid, I was like, this is awesome.
Oh yeah, that's the point. It's to entertain the kids. And that would be so funny if like they brought that back somehow and then they added Chris Chelios and it's just like a little video montage and made it as campy as it was back then. That would have been pretty funny.
That would have been awesome.
But the other thing I think we really got to talk about too tonight was, boy, it just Patrick Kane skating around for 3 minutes just to nothing but cheers. And it makes you reflect on how long he was here. Because how many athletes in our lifetimes have been around an organization as long as Kane or Toews?
I mean, in today's day and age, that's pretty, it's getting a lot more rare. In years past, it was more commonplace, but now it's pretty uncommon. So to have them have played here in Chicago for so long, it's a really special thing.
Yeah, I mean nearly 2 decades. Like that's insane. And the fact that not only did they play here all those seasons, you went on all those playoff runs. I mean, those games really add up.
They do. God, Cindy Crawford's still gorgeous.
I know she is. I know she is. There you go, another A-lister in the building.
I mean, it probably doesn't hit as hard for you, but like when I was a kid, like she was like the most beautiful woman on the planet. And
Oh, she was gorgeous. I've seen the pictures. Yeah.
yeah, but I mean, she was everywhere. And there's a Pepsi commercial with her in it. And it would have broke the internet if the internet existed then.
Well,
So
maybe there was an internet, and then she broke that, and then they had to make a new one. You just didn't know about it.
Al Gore had to fix it.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Hey, can we also talk about how funny it is just seeing Connor Bedard with that big fishbowl on his face?
It is ridiculous, but it's like I don't know. I mean, once either they don't think it's fully healed or it's a precautionary thing, but once that bone heals, like it is healed. There's so I don't know, but he looks ridiculous in it.
Oh, is that Mark Messier? Yeah, that is Mark Messier. Mark Messier is there too.
Oh yeah, I heard
Wow.
he was going to be there.
Yeah. Sheesh. Man, this place is loaded. Oh, also, I do have to make another comment, and I mean this in a nice, kind way, but
Hosa and Sharp.
I was going to point out Brent Seabrook. Get the. Put on a few. He seems to be living a happy life. Which, hey, he deserves it, man. I think he's involved in, I don't know if it's youth hockey or something, but Brett Seabrook's still heavily involved in hockey. I think he's, I don't know if it's coaching or general managing, but he's involved in that,
I think
so
he's coaching.
he's
That's what I heard.
coaching.
That's what I heard. I mean, I didn't investigate it, but that's what I heard, that he was doing coaching.
Yeah, good for him. I wonder what, because Marian Hossa is kind of part of the organization now, but yeah, I want Duncan Keith. I don't really know what he's been up to. Not, I mean, Duncan Keith's probably got enough money to just chillax for a while.
I mean, they all do. They've all got a lot of money.
Yeah. And I know Sharp is part of the Flyers organization. I think the front office. Because that's where you remember that's where they acquired him from. I wonder, you know, there are some other play because a lot of former Blackhawks, like, you know, we're keeping tabs of what they're doing. Obviously, a number of them are still with, you know, like Brian Campbell is still with the organization. Marian Hossa is part of the organization. But you know what I told my parents because I was watching with them today? There was a very noticeable absence.
Taves.
And I just, you don't really hear much from him, but I just wonder.
Didn't he make a video congratulating Shelley?
He might have. I just wonder with his health if everything's all right.
I don't, I mean, he's like taking a sabbatical year, but I don't think he's ever coming back.
No, in the to play in the NHL, no. I don't think so. I mean, it just I think he's probably made up his mind. I don't see him coming back. But I couldn't help but notice he wasn't there.
Yeah, a little bit surprising. But
Because, like, you know, a lot of
I
other.
heard he made a video.
And, you know, maybe he was just busy. I don't know. But yeah, I couldn't help but notice that.
But yeah, I mean, other than that, since Bedard's come back, he looks like he hasn't missed a beat.
No, and you know, obviously the team's not really winning, but you don't expect that. But yeah, no, I mean Bedard is, you know, he's getting on the score sheet pretty much every night and had a really nice goal against the Ottawa Senators last week. And then I know he had a kind of a garbage time goal the other night when they were down big in Carolina, but you know, just keep doing your thing 'cause that's really what there is to watch. And you know, Nick Foligno's been playing pretty well too, and that's
Yeah.
not much else. Not much else.
I mean, the overtime game the other day, we you know, I think the collective Blackhawks fandom is like, why the hell is Nick Foligno out there and not Connor Bedard? But
Yeah, and over time, you got to put seconds.
yeah, so but yeah, I mean, Connor Bedard just coming back and looking strong, like he didn't miss a single beat. And I was watching a thing, you know, more of a breakdown of him. And what's wild is they showed him skating to a you know, towards the goal, and the defender's skating backwards. And they said, here's normally where you would see the defender do a poke check. And the way Bedard like faked that he was going with a stick, and it forced the defender to have to put two hands on it so he couldn't do a poke check. So it gave him like a couple of extra seconds to be able to make a shot. And they said he's just like he's changing the way people are defending because he can do stuff like that. It was kind of wild.
That's cool. There's little things that you might not notice in action as the game is going really, really quickly.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when you're watching it, you don't, I guess I'm not looking at the defender's stick on plays like that. It's just, but you know, they say like the vision that he has is just next level. You know, he's gonna look awesome next to Macklin Celebrini next year.
Well, the way we're going, there could be a good chance we do it again, right?
You know how mad the whole league would be? It would be ridiculous.
Oh, I know. I know. That would be just insane. But you know, it's. Oh, you almost had a breakaway goal, too. Rats. But the thing looking forward with the Blackhawks is. Next year, I think this team really needs to start being serious about collecting legitimate talent. And, you know, Taylor Hall can hopefully come back next year and be part of the team. Losing him was a real bummer, a real, real bummer, because that was a very very solid, good forward that has the experience, has the skill, would have been a really nice asset to have with Connor Bedard. And you've been missing Andres Athanasiou's skill too, but, you know, credit to Jason Dickinson. He's having a good season. Like I said, Foligno, but you need more talent, type of talent than just that. You need to add some significant pieces. And I don't think it's unreasonable to say, hey, this team should at least start to be semi-respectable next year.
Yeah. And, you know, it's one thing to have a plan that's slow and methodical. I get that, trying to build it from with a strong foundation. But I think the blessing and the curse, there's a blessing and curse of winning the lottery and getting Connor Bedard. And the blessing is everything we've seen. The curse is you have to expedite your timeline, because you can't waste years of Connor Bedard.
No.
By being a miserable team trying to build for the future through draft picks and the farm system and such. You go, okay, this was our year to be bad with Connor Bedard. Now we've got to pony up and move this forward. And it's probably not the timeline that the Blackhawks wanted, but it's the reality. And, you know, you probably wish Lucas Reichel was looking like he's going to be part of that plan. And, you know, he got sent down and who knows where he's going to be. But, you know, you've got to start building around and, you know, do you have to go full commit? Like you're going to be a cup contender? No, but you should be fighting for a playoff spot next year.
I mean, at the very least, you should be competitive. I mean, you can't just be in the basement of the league again next year. Last year was your teardown year. This year was your Connor Bedard rookie year, doesn't have a team around him year. Next year, you got to start playing some somewhat meaningful hockey. And, you know, even if you miss the playoffs, but you miss the playoffs by just a little bit and you're like a 500-ish team, okay. You know, you can say we took a big step forward and that growth is not always quick in the NHL. But yeah, you can't be in the basement like this next year. And, you know, it's going to be tough because you got some really good teams around you. I mean, you look at a lot of the talent that's in the West right now in the NHL, but you're going to have to compete with that eventually. And yeah. I wonder if we're going to see a number of moves where the Blackhawks take on bad contracts, because you always know there are going to be teams out there that have cap issues that just give away good players, say, hey, you know what? If you take this guy, relieve us of our cap. And the Blackhawks will have plenty of cap space to work with. I mean, that's why they got Taylor Hall. You know, Boston needed to unload some cap. So I think you're going to see plenty of that again next year.
Yeah, I mean, I think that might be the smart way to do it, is you're still gaining, you know, draft capital, and you're getting quality players. You're just getting them with getting paid too much money.
Right, exactly. I mean, it happens every year. The teams have to clear cap. It's an annual thing.
Yep, and you have the advantage of being a bad team, so you have all this cap space.
And a shit ton of draft picks.
That's true. And, but I agree with you. Do they have to make the playoffs next year? Not necessarily, but they better be, you know, the last several weeks of the season, be in the hunt.
Yeah. And I mean, I think there's another reality too, that you're trying to figure out really how you're going to turn into a decent scoring team. Because right now, you just don't have the offensive weapons outside Connor Bedard to really be anywhere near an even decent scoring team.
You're a grinding goal team.
Right, exactly. I mean, you'll get some scrappy goals every now and then, but unless your name is Connor Bedard, you're not going to be seeing a lot of sweet deke moves. I mean, you're not going to be seeing Kane, Taze, Sharp, Hossa type goals that we saw for many, many years. And obviously, the Blackhawks right now would love to have Taylor Hall and Andres Athanasio, but even with those guys, would they be better? Yes, but they would be nowhere near an elite scoring team.
No, and I know there was a lot of people even recently saying the Blackhawks should have brought back Patrick Kane. And what would he have done for this team? Would he have made them, probably a marginally better, but not wholesale
better.
You're
not a contender, no.
You'd still stink. It would be fun to watch him and Bedard play, but it's not like they would be good.
The chapter was closed, and that's what it was.
Yeah, you eventually have to move on, and it seemed like a good enough time because you're like, all right, we stink. let's move on then, not have him spend the twilight of his career on a terrible team.
And you know, right now the Red Wings are in a playoff spot, so Patrick Kane has an opportunity to make the playoffs again. You know, he was in the playoffs last year with the New York Rangers, so he'll get another chance this year to play postseason hockey, which is good for him. And I think that it's fair to say, I'm sure he'd love to be here if he had the chance, but I also don't think he'd complain about having another chance at the playoffs.
That's the thing is, it's a place he loves and spent a lot of time and, but playoff hockey is awesome.
Yeah. And it's pretty big deal out there in Detroit. And they haven't been there in a few years, which we're not used to. I grew up and they were in the playoffs every single year. So them getting back there, big deal for Detroit and the Red Wings fans. So I'm sure Kane would like to be part of it. He saw firsthand what it's like to play in the playoffs in Detroit. So he gets to be a part of that.
Yep. So should we move on to the Cubs?
Yeah.
So we've been griping and moaning about the Cubs not making a big move and the fact that they hadn't signed Cody Bellinger. And in the wee hours last night, it looks like you saw late last night. I saw it very early this morning. And is Cody Bellinger is back to the Cubs on a 3-year, $80 million deal that has opt-outs after each year. So it's likely going to be a 1-year deal unless he stinks.
Yeah, it's kind of one of those things where you say, hey, you're not risking a lot here if you're worried about regression. But at the very least, you're going to have Cody Bellinger next year. And I know there are a lot of people wondering, well, it's really a 1-year deal. What if he opts out? Well, listen, you know what? You got to play 2024 first, and a lot can change. A lot can change. You can see Cody Bellinger have a decent season, not a great season, but then you see some of your prospects really shine, where you could say, okay, some of these guys you want to see now might not be blocked. Or you say, hey, Cody Bellinger is still really damn good. If he opts out, we could just offer him more money. Or they go in another direction because there's going to be more free agents next year. So I feel like not being locked down long term is a nice thing for the Cubs. And I do understand why some people can feel a little uneasy about there being the opt-outs. But like I said, I think right now, just you got to play 2024 first. And we know that Cody Bellinger will be here this year.
Yeah, his two positions are first base and center field. And, your top prospect is a center fielder. And you just traded for a first baseman. So I think the hope is that Bellinger is that, that bridge. And it's a big chunk of why they didn't want to lock him in for a long time, because, you don't want to block two young players. But also they're not ready to be super big contributors this year. So you needed that bat this year to be competitive.
Right. And the thing is that right now you feel better about going out there and saying, hey, first base, we know a guy who can play that position. Because before, it was just a revolving door of, well, maybe this, maybe that. Maybe you go with Mervis. Maybe you go with Michael Bush at times. Maybe you go with Patrick Wisdom. The lack of certainty there. But now, having Cody Bellinger, you feel if he needs to play first base, okay, we know he can. He's played it many times. And if you want to go with somebody else at first base and you don't have PCA, well, there's your center fielder.
I mean, you can put Bellinger in any of the three outfield spots defensively.
Yeah, yes, you could.
You could put him at first base. You could put him at DH. So you've got a plethora of spots where you can play him and keep him in, keep that bat in the lineup every day. But still not necessarily block people. So you're starting to see the vision of what the 2024 Cubs are going to look like. And it's starting to come together.
Yeah, you have a clear picture now with Cody Bellinger. Obviously, there's a lot of flex available on the roster. Is Alexander Canario going to be on the roster? Is PCA going to be on the roster? And I think one thing to watch, too, is how's the bullpen going to shape up? I think that's the biggest question right now in the middle of the bullpen, because there's a lot of guys that could be worked in and out there. Some veterans, some younger guys. Is Mark Leiter Jr. going to be part of it? I don't know. There are plenty of other options that they're looking at in camp. Is a rookie like Bailey Horn going to be part of it? He looked really good in his spring debut against the White Sox. Really good breaking ball. Will Danny Palencia be part of the equation? Caleb Killian. I know we've kind of given up on him, but, and I know it's just one outing, but he looked really sharp in that opener. He was throwing strikes. He was throwing hard. So what about Hayden Wesneski? I think that's a big question too. So that is going to be a very interesting development in camp, is seeing how that all comes together. Because I think we can say that the back end is going to contain Hector Neris and Adbert Alzolay. I don't think there's any doubt about that. It's the middle of that bullpen. And then, you know, obviously you have your long relievers. I think Smiley will be in there, and Javier Saad will probably start in the bullpen, assuming Jordan Wicks is going to be your fifth guy. So those are the things I'm watching in a camp. You know, you have your certain spots locked down, shortstop, second base, your catchers, corner outfields. But then there's a lot of other things that will be evaluated.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how this bullpen is going to look, but I feel a whole lot more confident right now than I did 1 year ago right now.
Yeah, me too. And just the fact that there's a lot of depth in the Cubs organization when it comes to pitching, I think that you have plenty of options where you could say, okay, you know, you're not just locked into this, this, and this. There are certain things you can try and you want to figure it out as soon as possible, but if something didn't work out, there are other options available. That's good to have.
Right. So, you know, the bullpen started to shape up. I think we know, barring an injury, and that we the pretty clear vision of what the starting rotation is going to look like. I'm assuming Assad is going to be that swing guy that can step in and be a starter, like long reliever, fill-in starter. But we're starting to see the shape of things, and now they've got Christopher Morel working hard at third base.
Made a few nice good plays today. I don't know if you saw that diving catch.
Yeah, and if we can get growth there, I think that would be huge, because that fills that hole.
Yeah, because I've said it before, Nick Madrigal played really good defense last year at third base, but I don't want my everyday third baseman being a sub 400 slugger. That's just not ideal. You want power at that position.
Yeah. I like him as a off the bench guy, a pinch hitter, because he makes such good contact.
Right. Yeah. I mean, even if you need to come off the bat and just move a runner over by slapping the ball the other way, you feel like Madrigal can do that. You know, he can put the ball in play, or, you know, if you need him to like pinch run or something or come in a defense. My question is too, are you going to see both Madrigal and Mastroboni? Because I know I've given Mastroboni a lot of grief, but I do think as a 26th man, you look at him and say, okay, he's got a better eye at the plate than Nick Madrigal, and he is a lefty, and he's a bit more versatile, but I do feel better about Nick Madrigal making contact. So you kind of look at those things and you just weigh the pros and cons, and you kind of see how they do in camp too. I mean, neither Madrigal or Mastroboni are 100% married to on this opening day roster. You don't have to have Nick Madrigal on the opening day roster. You don't have to have Miles Mastroboni on the opening day roster. But I think those are going to be things you evaluate when it comes to depth. And, you know, it's also going to factor in the prospects too. What prospects are going to make it? Because you only have so much room on a 26-man roster.
Yeah, and I know we're just three short games into this spring training, and there's not a lot that you're banking on off of these three games. But one thing I'm very happy to have seen is Brennan Davis.
Yeah, he looks healthy. His swings look good. He had a home run, had a few RBIs the other day. That is nice to see, because you know he's very, very talented. He's had those injuries.
Because I forgot who I was listening to. Maybe it was somebody from the Marquee Network. And they were talking about, if Bellinger doesn't come, what's the plan? And he's like, dark horse is Brennan Davis. And it's like he appears to be healthy. And he at one point was, you know, not that long ago, he was the MVP of the Futures game. And, you know,
yep,
he was,
I remember that well.
He was far and away the number one prospect in this farm system. And now he's what, like 20th?
Yeah. I mean, a lot of guys have been added to the prospect pool since then, but yeah, he was their number one prospect for a decent chunk of time.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I'm not banking anything on him. Anything you get from him is gravy, but man, that would be awesome for the Cubs to be able to get Brennan Davis and have him become Brennan Davis again.
Absolutely. Because that power really was impressive when he was healthy. Really smooth swing. Ball would just fly.
Yeah. But it's, you know, it's been fun watching, this young team play so far. And, you know, you've first couple games, things just looking solid so far. And I like the way this team is starting to come together. And we were a long way before opening day, but I'm feeling more confident. Would I like another starting pitcher? Yeah. But I mean, we're starting to see some, you know, this team come together. And I know part of it is you bring Bellinger back, and that's the glue of everything, because he's, you know, he adds the power and the star power and the ability to play multiple positions and the veteran leadership, and it's all that. But, you know, the the fact that he comes back brings a lot to it. But other than that, I mean, you know, seeing Morel being able to play third base and see guys be healthy and already there's some good swings of the bat. I'm getting excited.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully it's a good sign of things to come. I'm really liking PCA so far, scoring from second base, had a nice double in the first game. You want to see him keep hitting the ball hard. You want to see him being able to, you know, work the count a bit, and you know, it's just part of the growing process. And whether or not he makes it on the big league squad or not out of camp, progress is really what's important with him.
Yeah, I mean, I would rather him get more playing time in the minors and not make the roster.
Well, especially now that you have Bellinger.
Yeah, because you've got Hap, Suzuki, and Bellinger in the outfield. Like there's not space for him right now. I'm fine, you know, him having him start in the minors and give him some more playing time in at bats and seasoning, and that way, if he needs to come up for an injury or somebody struggling or whatever, that's, you know, he's ready to come in and play, not just coming cold off the bench at a young age.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, but the only concern that I really have is still this team still lacks power.
Well, Bellinger helps, and you hope that Christopher Morel could be a 30 homer type guy.
Yeah, and you hope that Hap can regain some of that power that he had early on.
Yeah, I mean, I like the fact that he hit 20 last year after he hit like only what, 17 the year before.
Yeah, I mean, I think he needs to be in the 20s. You need Suzuki to have that power stroke all season
Of
long.
course. Of course.
Bellinger and
Of
Morel
fucking
have to
course.
Bellinger and Morel
God.
have to carry you. And you know, you're gonna have to have power across the board to, you know, to make up for the fact that you know, the fact that you don't have one big bopper.
Of course. Did you see how the game just ended?
Yep, I was on a delay from you.
Of course. Of fucking course. Listen, I love Patty Kane, but god damn it. Anyway, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean it's gonna have to be a collective effort of a lot of people hitting a nice number of home runs to carry the Cubs for the fact that they don't have, you know, of big boppers.
Yeah, I mean, it would be nice if we could be guaranteed at this point. Will Michael Busch be that guy?
Yeah,
I don't know.
I
I
get.
mean, they're counting on him to be Max Muncy.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't know what we're gonna get from him. I'm not putting high hopes. I'm gonna put lukewarm hopes on him, but it's the trade. I'm still very high on the trade. I think that was a. That was a win for both teams and a win for the player. You know, the Cubs gave a lottery ticket for somebody that's major league ready, and he's got high potential, and the player, you know, is no longer blocked. I think it works out well, but we gotta see the kid play.
Yeah, I mean, you can't discredit him, but how they're going to use him is going to be interesting because if you didn't have Cody Bellinger, then you could assume that they would use him a lot more. I mean, truly. But now, I don't know. Are they going to use him in kind of a split role? We'll see. But it looks like he's finally going to be getting playing time in spring. He missed the first two games, as did Suzuki, but it looks like they're finally going to get into the lineup.
Yep. And I mean, He does play third. It's we've got a whole log jam of subpar fielding third baseman. But I mean, I think there's going to be, at least the hope is you have some movement around, rotating between DH and first base, and Bellinger moving around, playing some center, some first, some DH, Morel third and DH, and Bush first, third, and DH, and getting guys moved around and keeping that versatility.
Yeah, for sure.
So, I mean, the hope is that, he earns that spot and, is ready to be a regular contributor. Because if he can win that first baseman spot and really have an MLB ready bat, that would be huge.
Yeah, no kidding.
But
And a consistent one, too.
I mean, don't count out Matt Mervis. We were high on him a year ago, and
I just, where's he
he's still
gonna
there.
play? I mean, where's the room for him?
What if he beats out Bush as a first baseman?
Do you think that's gonna happen? I mean, I'm not saying it can't.
Yeah, I mean, that's what they play for. I do like. I mean, I trust in Craig Counsell to have the right guys there.
Yeah, so do I. So do I. I feel better about Craig Counsell than Shiny Dome. I'm sorry. That was mean.
I mean, yeah, I do. I feel good that he's gonna have guys playing well, and they're gonna have the right guys there. And I don't care if it's Bush or Mervis. It's if, but it's gonna be a tough sled for whoever doesn't win that starting job, because they're gonna be roadblocked there.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you're not going to fit everybody here.
No, and that's a good thing. It's a good thing that you have so many players, you don't know what you're going to do. And it does give you ammunition for trades too. If somebody's blocked, you can move on from them and be able to get something you do need.
Yeah, for sure.
But on the other side of town, the team's not looking so hot.
Well, I think the big story is this whole stadium thing.
Yeah. So Jerry Reinsdorf is a pile of garbage.
That's putting it lightly.
He doesn't put a good product on the field. And I'm going to pause quickly. Is White Sox fans, don't take this personal, because I'm on your side here. Is you deserve better. Absolutely deserve better. Is this guy only cares about making money.
Yeah.
And I know Ricketts cares about making money, but at least he recognizes that winning makes you more money. And Jerry is quickly becoming old man Wirtz.
Oh yeah, he's reaching those levels. I mean, he really is. I mean, next thing you know, he's going to be taking the games off TV. Although he ran out their beloved play-by-play announcer.
But he puts a bad product on the field, and he puts the blame for the bad everything else. Well, it's the economy. It's the fans not coming. It's the players got to play. It's the front office staff. He blames everybody but himself. And I believe that this Bellinger contract, this bridge contract slash, whatever you call it, this Bellinger contract would be the biggest contract in White Sox history.
Yeah. How about those comments that he made? I mean, there were actual things you could point to when he was saying, well, we have to get this new stadium. We have to get this funding because we can't sustain a business if we don't get it. The landscape has changed, blah, blah, blah. You have Shohei Ohtani making 700 million. You haven't even given out 100 million. You're one of the two teams in baseball that hasn't done that. One of the two. The Royals just did it. The team that you want to be so bad.
Yep. And
You're admitting that your business is not profitable. Hey, by the way, Jerry, you remember how much of our money was forked over to you for the last time you did this for the current ballpark and all the years of renovation that we had to put forth to it?
yeah, he's not getting squat. And good is, and I know last time he threatened moving to the team to Florida, and this time he's acting like he's going to move to Nashville. I hate to break it to you, Jerry. Look at the landscape of television deals outside of major markets right now. It doesn't look very good for baseball with the regional sport networks debacle. Is what do you think the television revenue is going to look like in Nashville compared to Chicago? Like what do you think? And that's where a big chunk of your like you are not like number one is you're not going to have those giant TV royal or revenues that going to Nashville. Two is you don't have a built-in fan base in Nashville. Do you think you're just going to have droves of people showing up to watch a 100 loss team that's brand new in your city? No. Is Jerry is just trying to milk the system for everything he can. And then he throws the, well, if you don't give it to me, you're going to have to give it to the next owner. Maybe the next owner won't be a cheap jerk and will actually pony up and try to build a winner.
And he tries to sell the whole cliche. Well, if you give me $1 billion and then some to build the stadium and the infrastructure, it's going to revitalize the economy. Actual economists have come out and they said that that age-old trick, that age-old saying, that salesman type pitch is just not true. It's just not true. Talk about, oh, it's going to revitalize jobs, blah, blah, blah. The economic impact that owners love to preach when it comes to this, when they ask for public funding, economists are coming out and saying, hey, guess what? It's not all it's cracked up to be.
There has never, not once in the history of building stadiums, been one that was publicly funded that ended up being beneficial to the community that funded the project. Not once. It is always, and this is not just for baseball. This is for any sport. This is for the Olympics. This does not return the value. And so that's why communities don't want to do it anymore. They've learned. And you look at Oakland. Oakland's like, no, we're not giving you a stadium. They're like, well, we're going to move to Vegas. And then you have the mayor of Vegas going, maybe you should stay in Oakland. And so they don't, who knows what's happening with the A's? Like, it's not like you're not going to get a welfare subsidy for your billion-dollar business. It's just not happening anymore. And Jerry is so old and decrepit, he doesn't understand that times have changed. And he surrounded himself with a bunch of yes people, and nobody's saying, hey, maybe this is a bad publicity look. People already hate your guts, and you're gonna prance yourself out there. Bad look. Bad look. And sure, a ballpark at the 78 would be cool, but it's I until they put a winning product on the field, White Sox fans, like, here's the thing. Wrigley Field and that neighborhood are a destination spot for people. is how many times have you had people come into town and go, "Hey, let's catch a game at Wrigley." They're not Cubs fans. They want to go to Wrigleyville. They want to go to see the Cubs. And it doesn't matter if the Cubs fans come because you've got so many other people that are just coming to these games. The White Sox don't have that. Maybe you'd get a little more of that being closer to downtown, but in Bridgeport, you don't have that.
Well,
And
that first year, yeah. I mean, if you open up the shiny new toy to people, at first people will definitely come out more than you would expect, I would think, right?
yeah, you'll get a bump that first year. But White Sox fans, and rightfully so, are fickle. If you don't w put winning team on the field, they're not coming. And the White Sox don't learn from that. We'll blame them. Like, stop trying to come up with promotions like, "Oh, two hot dogs and a t-shirt for 20 and a ticket for $20. Come on out." Like, no, put a winning team on the field. If you make a winning team, people will show up. Period. Whether that's at the 78 at a new stadium or in Bridgeport and you renovate the existing stadium. Like, if you put a winner there, people will show up.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, it's almost like you're looking for an excuse to do everything you can, but building a winning team, because building a winning team actually requires you to spend your own money.
And the same logic is applying to the Bulls. And it's harder to quantify it with the NBA team because there's a floor, and technically there's a cap, but there's a floor too. So you spend a certain amount of money and it doesn't look as bad as it does with the Major League Baseball team. But if you look, is the Bulls have one max player. Look at the best teams, multiple max players. And you're winning that way. You're winning going beyond the cap. You're paying into the luxury tax. And Jerry's not going to do that. So that's why you're not going to see the Bulls win until he sells the team. You're not going to see the White Sox win until he sells the team. Is you need, like, you look at the last time the White Sox were competitive a few years ago, they made the playoffs but got smoked because you finally had your GM sell everything, strip it down to the bare bones, and hit on a bunch of your prospects. And what did Jerry do? He said, "All right, we've got a winning team. I am going to put this drunk, decrepit old fool as the manager," and he ruined it. He ruined it.
Yeah, hijacked it.
Yep.
And then
And
they didn't supplement their team with any more notable talent.
nope. We talked about that. Is the team as is was a good team, but they needed to put some money into it. Not even huge amounts. They needed a bulletproof few spots, and they didn't. And it came back to bite them hard. You didn't bulletproof that lineup, and probably another $15 or $20 million would have done it. He just wasn't going to budge, and it was going to be old drunky Magoo was going to get them those extra wins, and he didn't. He cost them games, and he was like the Crypt Keeper sitting in that dugout, and that's you screwed the pooch. Jerry Reinsdorf is a cancer in baseball.
Wasn't he the one that kind of helped spearhead the strike in '94 when the White Sox probably had the best team they had had on the field in decades that year? And wasn't Jerry Reinsdorf also the one that said, nah, to the development around the current ballpark when they got their new one? Nah, I want parking lots. So now he wants the entertainment. Now he wants the district. But he wants the city to pay for that. Just like they're paying for his current ballpark.
And I know Rob Manfred is talking about this, like, 2% of the hotel tax that's up for grabs. I hate to break it to you, is there's another team that more desperately needs a new stadium that is vying for that same money. And I know what's happening is the reason that that Jerry Reinsdorf is pushing for this right now is he's trying to beat the Bears to the money. He wants that certain amount of money to beat the Bears to it. And you know, the Bears would be smart to just, you know, beat Jerry to his own at his own game and try to get this certain amount of money, that 2% of the hotel tax. But Jerry is just out for Jerry. And the, you know, once he dies, he's already said he wants his kids to sell the team. So the White Sox are going to have new ownership in a couple of years because Jerry's not going to be around. I mean, what is he, 88?
Yeah, he's up there. He's in his upper 80s.
You know, it's not like women tend to live a lot longer. So when you have, you know, Virginia at 101, I don't see Jerry living that long.
Oh, just wait. He'll be Mr. Burns.
But yeah, it's so frustrating that you can't pay players. You don't any that your fans might have had. He just squashes it. And any opportunity, like he went from being the behind the scenes guy to now he's front and center being the ghoul that he is. I think it's a good word for him. He is a ghoul.
A ghoul.
So screw that guy. And White Sox fans, you deserve better. And he's not moving the team. Just, you're going to have to wait it out. We'll never know if Chris Getz is a good GM or not, because he's never going to get an opportunity to showcase that.
Yep. And you know what? Here's the other thing too. So much could be different now in public opinion if you were in the middle of legitimately a World Series window. And I don't think people would want to pay the money, but I think that there would at least be the public thinking, you know, if they work out a good deal and this team is going to continue to win, then we can make the best out of some of this. But it's the fact that Jerry doesn't want to put the money into the team. And that's really soured a lot of people. It's like, you don't want to pay for your team to be good, and now you're asking for $1 billion+ from the state, like pound sand.
Yep.
And you know what? I don't see a division here. I really don't. It's like Cubs and White Sox fans are both saying, get bent, Jerry, truly.
Yeah. I mean, united front here is like, I'm a Cubs fan, but I for the White Sox, I root for the city of Chicago. So if they're not playing each other, I'm rooting for the White Sox to win. And so I want to see your team do well. You're just not until Jerry's dead. Sounds cold and cruel. It's just true. It's just like old man Wirtz is, you got to wait for the guy to die. And, you know, with Wirtz, his son came in and just changed everything. And the two sniveling, snot-nosed, you know, Reinsdorfs, they're just going to sell the team. And hopefully they sell it to somebody with good intentions.
Yeah, I mean, that's what you can hope for.
I don't know how true this is, but I heard an interview back a long time ago that with Mark Cuban, and that he had interest in, I don't know if it was buying the White Sox outright or if it was buying a stake in the White Sox, but he was talking about how as part of the process, he got a look at the books and the viewership, and he was stunned at what a small cut of the baseball viewership on television that the White Sox had. And, you know, the first thing he would have to do is change that dynamic and bring in more television viewership. And like, all right, there's somebody that right away gets it by looking at something for 10 minutes, you know, recognizing that this, you know, if you're a Pirates fan, you know, all right, we're probably never going to win a World Series ever again because we're this tiny market that can't afford to compete. But, you know, people are going to roll out to do something in the summer. All right, there you go. Like, the White Sox are becoming that, and they shouldn't, because they're a major market team. They should have ownership that is trying to actually win and do the things they're supposed to do as a big market team.
Yeah. It's just so gross. And I know so many White Sox fans who are just, they are just so freaking done. They're so apathetic. They're like, why do I care? It's like how a lot of us feel about the Bulls right now. Yeah. Why should we care? Why should we invest time and money and effort? There's no reason to right now.
Yeah, I just, it's tough. Like, it's tough watching the Bulls because they, same thing. It's, they're at least a team that can compete. You know, they just not consistent with their winning. The White Sox just stink. And it's going to be a miracle if they don't lose 96 plus games.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, what are they projected? Like mid-60s wins right now? I mean, I could see them kind of floating with upper 60s wins because I think in a season where the pressure's off, Mankata's going to start to decide to hit consistently again. And, you know, you might have Luis Robert hit pretty well. Their defense is going to be a little bit better. But overall, you look at the depth of that team and you're like, wow, you got Kevin Pillar and Mike Moustakas and, you know, just a bunch of veteran guys who are at the end of their careers. You know, I'm looking at the roster when they played the Cubs. I'm like, wow, Ortega, Jesse Chavez. Wow. You know, a lot of former dudes from a few years ago. So, yeah, I mean, they're clearly not building to be a prime contender this year. And you could be even worse if you do trade Dylan Cease midseason, which I feel like they probably will. So, yeah, I mean, I'm thinking it's going to be between like 90 and 99 losses somewhere in there, the way this is going.
Trying to look for the projections. All right. AL Central.
I mean, that division sucks.
All right.
It's so bad.
They're projecting, USA Today is projecting a 90 loss season. MLB. Dun, 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 dun. Pakoda is projecting 96.4 losses. Who else is doing projections? Yeah, they're not projected to be very good. So, I don't have high hopes. And then once they trade Dylan Cease, it's going to be worse. And here is how FanGraphs is projecting their Martin Maldonado and Max Stassi's catchers. Andrew Vaughn is your first baseman. Nicky Lopez, second base. Paul DeJong as your shortstop with Colson Montgomery coming in at some point. Yoan Moncada at third, Benintendi at left, Luis Robert in center, Dominic Fletcher in right, Eloy at DH, and your starters being Dylan Cease, Eric Fetty, Michael Kopech, Michael Soroka, and Chris Flexen.
Yeah, that pitching, I think, is the biggest weakness.
Yeah, and they brought in the corpse of Jesse Chavez. I've always liked Jesse Chavez, but boy, first outing didn't look so hot.
No, but you know what might happen? He'll put up like a 6 ERA with the White Sox, and then they'll trade him to Atlanta, and then he'll have like a 0.98 ERA there.
Oh man, FanGraphs is projecting every White Sox starter that's not named Dylan Cease to be like a 1 WAR or a less than 1 WAR.
Yeah, no, not surprising. I mean, Eric Fetty maybe can take what he learned overseas and be decent. And Soroka was a really damn good pitcher. He just got hurt and didn't pitch for 2 years. So I think he might have potential to be something. I'm not saying anything great, but maybe not terrible. With Michael Kopech, I don't know. I mean, we've seen flashes of greatness with Michael Kopech out of the bullpen or spot starting, but last year he was just brutal.
Yeah, Kopech is projected by FanGraphs to have a 0.8 WAR. And
yeah,
your reliever, if you rank them by WAR, the White Sox are projected to only have two players with a positive WAR in the bullpen, and
was that Brebbia and
Chavez.
Chavez.
And they're 0.4 WAR and 0.3 WAR. Everybody else is a negative WAR.
Yeah.
I take that back. Garrett Crochet is 0.1.
Well, he's going to be what? On the fringe of... I mean, are they going to try to start him? I mean, what's going on with that?
I don't know. That's the talks. They're projecting Luis Robert to have a 4 WAR. And Moncada 2.3, Nicky Lopez 0.5. The stat line that they're projecting here for Nicky Lopez: 244, 316, 316. 316 slugging's not going to do it.
No, not great.
Paul DeJong, they're projecting a 381 slugging. Maldonado, 323 projected slugging. Yeah. It's going to be a long season.
Well, I think the big thing that many fans are looking forward to is seeing Colson Montgomery come up, hopefully. Hopefully he's healthy. And then, you know, maybe you see what type of prospects you get in the trade for Dylan Cease. I think that David Fletcher is kind of an interesting move. He might be something. I thought that was a kind of a savvy deal by the White Sox. And, you know, they picked up a few young guys in that trade with Atlanta. So you look for what you can get.
Yeah, I mean, you know, on paper, the two catchers they have had nice, decent careers. Maldonado, you know, had a pretty solid career as a defensive catcher. He just had a really rough year last year.
Yeah, well, he's old.
He's old, and I think the hope is that he can have a bounce back year. But was he like 36? So I don't know. It's but he was cheap. So criteria number one for Big Jer. You want to talk a little Bears?
Sure.
So first is former Bear news related is Robbie Gould coming back home. He's going to be the football coach for Rolling Meadows High School.
Yeah, that's great to see. Love it.
Yeah. So congrats, Robbie.
I wonder if more people are going to go out to those games just to see Robbie Gould coach. I bet there will be.
I'm going to do it.
I'm tempted too.
Yeah, like, you know, it's a former Bear legend there.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure that a lot of people will be out waiting by the stadium to get a picture with him or just to shout at him. It'll definitely draw some crowds.
Yeah. So, you know, good for him. You know, well, he doesn't need the money.
No.
Just, you know, going back and doing things that he loves.
Yeah, which is great.
And then we had the Bears offense and defensive coordinators speak the other day. Eric Washington, I liked what he had to say. You know, where he's going to have input on things and really, really wants to make a defensive line that gets a lot of pressure and having adaptability. I liked it. Shane Waldron was kind of exhausting.
Isn't the Bears offense always exhausting?
Yeah. Granted, you know, on paper of the candidates they had, he was the one I wanted the most, but a little exhausting. And I feel bad for him because you can't say anything about the quarterback position because you've got to be mum on that one. And so trying to talk about what you're going to do where you can't talk about the quarterback, that's a minefield that you gotta walk through.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I know he talked about having the, you know, making the best, you know, making it work with whatever players you have. Is go back and listen to every Bears offensive coach for the last 20 years. They've all said the same thing. And so I know it's coach speak, but they've got to come up with something better than that, the adaptability.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the one thing that I can say is going forward, if this team is going to win, I just want, no matter who the quarterback is, just want something that's fundamentally sound and makes sense. Where we're not scratching our heads and banging our heads against the wall after scratching said heads. You know, right now, like you said, it's a lot of coach speak. So the results are really going to be what's telling.
Yes. And, you know, regarding the quarterback, I'm not going to get in this debate. I have a player that I like a lot, and I'm just leaving it at that. Because at the end of the day, I don't care if Tyson Bagent is the starting quarterback and they go with him and trade the first pick and trade Justin Fields, as long as they're winning football games. That's all I want. I want the Bears to be relevant. I want the Bears to be competing for a Super Bowl. I want to watch them hoist the trophy. Like, that's what I want. I don't care. And at the end of the day, Ryan Poles, whatever he does with the quarterback position, he's got to hit a home run with it. Period. If it's keep Justin Fields, he had better have a plan in place to get him to that next step, and better have a plan to put a full team around him, a good offensive line, competent wide receivers, and play calling that works. And if it's drafting the number one pick with a quarterback, he'd better hit a home run on that quarterback. It can't be a, you know, a lottery ticket. It better be a sure thing. You know, that player had better play. Because if you go in there and draft a Trubisky and later on there's a Mahomes, this fan base can't take it.
No. God, no.
We can't handle it. We've tried kicking that football enough, and Lucy keeps pulling it away. Is we need to be able to kick that football. But, you know, we keep hearing now these conflicting reports. The Bears are set to trade the number one pick. The Bears have a framework in place to trade Justin Fields. The Steelers are interested in Justin Fields. The Steelers have no interest in Justin Fields. Atlanta is hot for Justin Fields. Atlanta has no interest in Justin Fields. The Raiders just hired an offensive coordinator that butted heads with Justin Fields, but the Raiders were interested in trading for Justin Fields. I just want to reiterate two things. One, the Bears front office, both Ryan Poles and Kevin Warren, are very, very, very big on secrecy. They don't want anything leaking out. So if anything's coming out, it's either made up bullshit or it was an intentional leak. And number two, this is lying season. Is anything anybody says, it's a lie. You just don't know what degree of a lie, but it's a lie. So none of us are going to know what Ryan Poles plans to do until Ryan Poles pulls the trigger and does what he's going to do. And that's just the way that is that list of people that are in that inner circle making the decision on what their quarterback situation is going to be next year. That circle is small, and they're keeping that close to the vest. And for good reason, is because if everybody knows you're going to draft a quarterback, that drops the value, the trade value of Justin Fields. Because people are like, you know what? They're not going to keep both. If he doesn't get a trade, he's going to cut him. And you can lowball a trade offer because the Bears will want to get something for him. If he declares that Justin Fields is his dude, you know, the value of that number one pick drops. Is you've got to maintain the value until you decide you're going to do what you're going to do. And he had a masterclass in that last year. The haul that he got for that, the number one pick last year, was chef's kiss. So, you know, this year he's got to maintain that. And he's got to, you know, if you trade Justin Fields, walk away with a high second round pick or, you know, a future number one.
Yeah. I mean, listen, any of this rumor stuff that comes out, whether the Bears are going to trade Justin Fields or trade the number one pick or draft Caleb Williams, I don't even pay attention to it. I truly don't. Only thing that matters is what's going to happen on draft day. Everything else is just meaningless noise.
Yeah. And, you know, last year we saw a really early movement. And if he moves Justin Fields well before the draft, okay, then we know he's going quarterback. Then we can start doing our speculation of which quarterback it is. Because, you know, I've seen quote unquote draft experts talking very highly about multiple quarterbacks, from Caleb Williams to Jaden Daniels to Bo Nix to Drake May to JJ McCarthy. Like, you've got five quarterbacks that people are very high, you know, did varying degrees of quote unquote draft experts very high on. So, you know, until either that pick is traded or Justin Fields is traded, I'm not even wanting to do a mock draft because it's going to be so wild. You have no idea what's going to happen.
Exactly.
But you know, as much as I don't always agree with well, what's his name? The draft guy with the hair. The ESPN draft guy.
The
Mel Kiper.
draft guy with the hair.
Mel Kiper. Yeah, Mel Kiper had a good point. He's like, regardless of what you're doing with the number one pick, by when you go to draft that number nine pick, the top three wide receivers are most likely not going to be there. Rome Odunze, Malik Nabers, and Marvin Harrison Jr. are likely all going to be gone by the time you draft nine. So if you do draft a quarterback, you know that you're probably going to have to go to free agency to get the stud wide receiver to pair with DJ Moore because you're not going to get one of those top three. And I know there's a lot of talent at wide receiver, but to have that guy that comes in day one ready to play, you're probably not getting that dude at nine.
Right, exactly.
What else is going on with the Bears? Yeah.
Not really much else.
No. I've tried to block anything out because everybody has a plan of how to fix the Bears. And I've seen one where it's signing people to free agency that aren't even free agents. By the time you guys listen to this show, the Underwear Olympics will have started, the NFL Combine. And the hope is that that distracts us from whatever else is going on for a week, buys us a little breathing room.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the combine is going to bring a lot of these crazy rumors and oh, you see the Bears, the Ryan Poles is drinking blue Gatorade. You know what that means?
You know who else likes blue Gatorade? Marvin Harrison Jr. His favorite is blue.
According to sources.
I talked to Marvin Harrison Sr.'s hairdresser's mom, and she said that Marvin Harrison Jr.'s favorite flavor of Gatorade is blue because he likes the Bears. Sources reporting this are me.
To me.
Per me and Marvin Harrison Sr.'s barber's mom, this is the Bears lock deal.
I also have insight with Hallis Hall. Per me.
I just want to start putting that in every tweet. Per me.
Well, I mean, if you give an opinion, it is per you.
per me. But oh yeah, one last thing is the window to franchise tag players is open, and the Bears have not yet franchise tagged Jalen Johnson. I'm assuming they're going to try to get some sort of framework done for a long-term deal, because if you can do that, it's nicer to not put the franchise tag on. Is even if you work it out, players don't like having that franchise tag slapped on them.
No, they don't.
And I know there's a lot of nerdarios on the internet that are like, well, it's in the collective bargaining agreement that they voted for. So if they don't want the franchise tag, they should not have voted for it. But you know what? Players don't like it. And they don't want to be franchise tagged. They want a long-term deal. They want to have say in where they're playing and for how much money they're playing for. And the franchise tag, takes that away. And I understand the need to, as a team to have some control over not losing your best player. If the Bears can get a deal done with Jalen Johnson without having to slap the franchise tag on him, I think that's a win-win for the player and the team. It shows that the team can work something out without having to use that leverage, and the player, doesn't feel disrespected by having the franchise tag slapped on him.
Yeah, absolutely. Because since who got franchise tagged? The first person to get franchise tagged, obviously it wasn't on the Bears, but somebody got franchise tagged. I just don't remember who it was.
Let me see. I don't. Oh, T. Higgins.
T. Higgins, that's who it was. T. Higgins.
Yeah. I think he's the only one that's been tagged so far. And you know, I think that's one that, yeah, they're gonna love to re-sign him. I think they need to figure out where they are from a cap perspective, because the Bengals are gonna have to make some moves, I think, to be able to maneuver around paying their quarterback that much money.
Yeah.
Yeah, because the cap did go up significantly,
It did, yes.
but
Which is more good news for the Bears.
yeah, so the Bears at this point right now have over $78 million in cap space. And the team with the most cap space has a little over $1 million more of cap space than the Bears.
Yeah, it's pretty good. It's a lot of space. Because, obviously cutting Eddie Jackson and Cody Whitehair, that saved like what, 21 million?
Yeah. And it was the right move to make, cutting both
Yeah,
players.
you did. You had to make those moves.
Is, you know, Cody Whitehair, like, thanks for everything you did. It was time. I think the league is telling you that it's time to retire. You can't play anymore. Eddie Jackson, I think if you could have reworked a deal and taken a significant pay cut, I wouldn't have minded having him back. Because that does leave a hole for you at the safety position. I don't think the Bears have Eddie Jackson's replacement on this roster right now.
No, you don't. You don't. But you know what? You have plenty of opportunities to get one
Yeah.
in a number of different ways. And listen, this is a situation where none of this is surprising. I mean, we knew Cody Whitehair was going to get cut. We knew it. And we were pretty certain that Eddie Jackson was going to as well, just based on the production, the age, and the money they were making.
Right. And so I, you know, I like I said, is Eddie Jackson's replacement. You know, if you look at if you some other positions, like if Jalen Johnson were to leave, his replacement is on this team. It's just gonna next man up, because they have Kyler Gordon and Tyreek Stevenson and Terrell Smith, and they would probably draft somebody else or sign a, you know, a backup type cornerback, but it would be those three guys stepping up. But the safety position, I don't think that safety is on this team. So they're going to have to draft somebody or sign somebody. But I still think wide receiver, number one position of need, and edge rusher is your number two. Those are the two positions that you've gotta get better.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, you know, center, if you break out the offensive line positions, center's way up there too. But you know, that's I don't know how they're gonna handle center. I'm assuming you're gonna try to sign like Lloyd Cushenberry or you know, one of the veteran guys that's in a free agent.
Yeah, plenty of options.
I don't want to talk about the Bulls.
Neither do I. Neither do I.
Was there anything else you wanted to talk about?
Nope, I think I said my piece.
All right, well, I think that's going to do it for this episode of Bill Swirsky Sports Talk Chicago. Thank everybody so much for listening. Please hit subscribe however you listen to podcasts, whether it's iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, Google Play, Spotify, etc. Share this podcast with your friends, how we grow the show. Follow us on social media at Swirsky Sports, facebook.com/Swirsky Sports, swirskysports.com, or Shy Fan Pat 2 for Alex on Twitter/X, and Shy Fan Pat or alexanderjpatcreative.com for all the cool stuff that Alex does. And again, thank you guys so much for listening. Until next time, bear down.
Cubs win! What a lucky break! The good Lord wants the Cubs to win!
We thank Ditka and God for all they have provided.
Cubs win! Cubs win! Cubs win!
Oh, I don't want her. You can have her. She's a Packer fan. She can't fit in my van.
And she looks like...
Remember, New Yorkers, smoking crack is not legal on planes.
Bears, 31 to negative 7.
The Bears!
Oh, when the Bears go bearing down...